I'll give him 2 minutes.
We want to start anyway. Just start with introductions.
Good morning. We have two House members who say they're on the way, and I hope you all look at your watches when they come in, but... Oh, here we go. Yay.
Represent Tammy's.
Yes.
Don't normally get that much attention.
Very good. A quorum is present, so we can call the meeting to order.
You were just going to call 5 TV News.
Good morning. My name is Paul Gardner. I'm a representative from Shoreview, and we're here for a conference committee on House File 3477. Since this is a House file, I'm told that I will wield the gavel, and Senator Marty tells me we have really cheap ones here. We're told the speaker got a deal at Costco with these, apparently. This likely will be a short conference committee, but since we're going to work together for all of 10 minutes, maybe I just thought we'd do some quick introductions of the folks at the table, if that's all right. And if I could just start on Senator Jungbauer's side, that'd be great.
Oh, Senator Mike Jungbauer, Senate District 48, the north end of the metropolitan area from East Bethel across to Elk River, Ramsey, and Oka.
Great.
Linda Scheid, I represent Brooklyn Center and Brooklyn Park, Senate District 46.
Chris Stang, Commerce Committee Counsel on the Senate side.
Laura Bluebaugh, Committee Staff.
John Marty, represent the south end of the north end of the metro area.
I'm Paul Gardner. I represent the better half of Shoreview compared to Senator Marty's northern half or southern half of Shoreview. But.
I'm John Reck. I'm the committee administrator for the Commerce Committee in the House.
I'm Tom Pender from the House Research Department.
Representative Jim Daphne, I represent District 62A, which is part of South Minneapolis on the eastern side, but not southeast Minneapolis.
Very good. And Representative Burns will be the deciding vote.
Good.
Well, good morning again.
Banking, John? No, just
kidding. You know, in case my mother listens to the audio, we'll make sure that we clearly mention what we're doing here. But we have two versions of this bill from the House and Senate that are relatively similar. This bill was worked out to provide basic predatory lending protections to owners of manufactured housing, what we used to call mobile homes. I have about 600 of these units in my district, so it's been of interest to me. And the city of Lexington that I represent has the second park to go co-op in the state at the Paul Revere Park. So that was of interest to me. The House version is the one that was agreed upon, as most stakeholder processes goes. Up right until the last minute till something's presented on the floor, changes are made among the advocates and other stakeholders. And the House version has the most current version with one exception of a definition that was missing, and we'll have an amendment for that. And Senator Murray and I spoke yesterday about stuff related to the notice given by a registered or certified mail, which we can discuss. I first maybe wanted to check to see if other members of the conference committee just needed any more background on the bill since we've done it on there. Oh, okay. One of the nice things to know when you're elected, you have people to do things, and I'm told we have House Research and Counsel who can just walk by the side by sides if that works. I don't know how you divvy it up, flip a coin, or.
Mr. Chairman, I'm just wondering how much time you want to spend on the Senate language, given your earlier statement about stakeholder agreement on some of the House language, especially in terms of the right and reinstatement and so forth in the House bill. We can do whatever you'd like.
Mr. Chairman, I think he's right that because there seems to be, and we can ask for the witness's comments in a minute, but because of that, I think we might as well just go through the House language.
Sounds good to me. Do I just... Rip it right there.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you. I think if we note anything on the Senate language, we could just say, well, the Senate language varied from here. Here's why we came to the House language, or something real simple explanation instead of going through the Senate language. Just kind of a glossing over of what the differences were and why it ended up the way it is.
Perhaps we could have Mr. Pender go through each House section, and then the witnesses could comment on why there's a preference for that.
Great. Fire away, Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm going to use the revisers side by side that was in the members' packets, and I think copies were available for the audience. In section one, the this is an amendment to a statute that already exists. In section one, the House added language about sending. This is for commencement of a repossession of a manufactured home by sending by certified or registered mail to the occupant a notice. And on line 1.22, the House amended language that in current law says the affidavit that goes with the notice shall state that the secured party has no reason to believe, and the House changed that to no reliable information causing the third party to conclude. And then the House added a text for what the notice is supposed to say, and basically it tells people that their loan's in default and they should try to get help from organizations that help people who are in foreclosure as soon as possible. And the Senate added a similar notice language. And also a warning that this is basically a 30-day notice, that if you don't become current on your loan within 30 days, we'll seek a court order giving us permission to repossess the property. And the House added their language, it's in paragraph C, saying that if the debtor doesn't sign for this, the certified or registered letter containing the notice within 5 days after the first attempted delivery, the secured party can go ahead just as if the debtor's signature had been secured by delivering the certified or registered.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, I don't want to interrupt Mr. Pender, but I know he's moving on to a different section, and I thought if I might just say a couple things about the House language. I think it's an improvement on this. It's an expansion and an improvement in that notice language. The only thing I would like us to do. I like how we offset that last sentence. I realize you shouldn't have a one-sentence paragraph, but maybe we could just embolden, if you will, that last sentence. If you do not become current within 30 days, we'll seek a court order, etc. I like that being somehow highlighted so people understand, you know, how serious this is, but I think the language itself in that paragraph is better. And then I noticed that we have language dealing with that, how that notice is served and or mailed. And I kind of like this suggested language, but I don't know whose it is or what it is. But it seems that it makes some sense that somebody might ignore those little slips from the Postal Service that say you have a package or you have a piece of mail at the post office. But if they actually get something first-class mail, then they will at least have seen this notice.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, I raise that same concern and have an amendment to address that.
No, okay.
So, and Mr. Chair, maybe Senate Counsel, I like Senator Scheid's comment about a separate paragraph, but I assume that's just a cut and pasting in the Senate language that separated them a little bit. I don't think there's actually a gap in there.
Right.
You would like
so
to
I'd
make
like,
a gap.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid,
bolding.
Senator Marty, I'd like to highlight it.
In bold or something?
In bold print or something, at least that. And maybe the whole thing would be, it could be if they chose, but this way at least the person would know this is serious business.
I'm not familiar with how the reviser handles bolding, but...
Can I do that?
We just, you know, capitals.
I'll let you mull that over for a second.
Nothing else would be.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Mr.
Just say if the reviser can't bold it, a sentence could be inserted saying something like that sentence, that final sentence should be in bold. Or
yeah, that, I mean, Mr. Chairman, so something that sets it apart. I'm not going to, you know, on the individual single or up to four family home, we in that mortgage foreclosure, we have a separate notice on different colored paper bringing this to people's attention. I just think this would be a nice thing to bring to people, to highlight the seriousness of this.
Senator Jungbauer and then Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think having dealt for a number of years with real estate contracts and the transfer disclosure statements and things, I believe the statute calls for specific font size and perhaps italics within that. We could, and I do understand where Senator Scheid is talking about, some of these notices can be quite lengthy and have a lot of things in there. If we know that they can get right to the meat of it and focus in on that specific serious point, I think that's a very good point Senator Scheid made. So perhaps Mr. Pender could see how we call that out in statute on other items in terms of font size or something.
Very good. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm having some of the same thoughts I think Senator Scheid is in terms of what I have seen as notice requirements in other areas where it is different colored papers, font size, things like that. And this doesn't have some of that level of specificity. I think my question is this the only thing in the envelope? Because I think some of the argument for the references that Senator Scheid made is you're getting a bundle of papers and we're making sure that there's one that stands out in single through smaller multifamily home ownership situations. Is this the only thing that the occupant or owner is getting? Or is this one piece of paper in a package at which point we might want to look at more closely modeling it on other language already in statute?
The witnesses. Well, I'm kind of wondering about the sense of the committee here, whether we want to finish running through the language and then sort of make a list of our questions and concerns and then have the testifiers testify, or would you like to just get right into answering the question that's been posed,
Mr.
with
Chairman,
the witnesses?
I don't know that there are going to be a lot of questions, but why don't we have the witnesses comment if they have any.
Very good.
Help on that.
Would Ms. Kaplan or the folks from the park owners care to comment on the questions raised by members about bold italics and what's in the, and if you could state your name and sure. association for the record, that'd be great.
Mark Bruner, a Minnesota Manufactured Housing Association. And I think that's a good suggestion in terms of the, you know, the bolding or a certain point font to be used. Makes sense.
Anything from MAPEC?
Margaret Kaplan from All Parks Alliance for Change. We're the tenants union for people who live in manufactured home communities. I know that there is another notice in another provision of the law that does require at least 14-point font size, so I don't think there would be any reason why we couldn't do something similar here, and I think that would make a lot of sense. As far as the question about multiple notices in the same envelope, to my awareness, this would be the only thing in that envelope. So there wouldn't necessarily be something that needs to differentiate this from a lot of other materials because, you know, under the law, they just send this notice.
Okay. And I noticed the issue of notice appears in several places in the bill. So if we could just make sure that everything is consistent if we choose to embolden or italicize or what have you, that we do that. Any word from council on how we might specify the bolding?
All caps.
Mr. Chair, the reviser's office and statute can certainly capitalize things, and I just don't know off the top of my head if they can bold things or not. But if they can't, we could put something in here saying that particular sentence or part of the notice should be in bold.
Mr.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, either that or just capitalized. In which case, I think the reviser could do that. That would highlight that language. Because I know we do that. I mean, I've seen that in statute books.
I'll move that we insert language asking that the last sentence be in all caps.
And if I could add to that motion that we, for all similar mentions of that same notice throughout the bill, that we do the same thing and put it in all caps. Any questions to the motion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
That's it?
Yes. The motion is adopted. Mm-hmm. The motion carries. The motion is adopted.
Then, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, is it appropriate to move Section 1, or do you want to wait?
We can move Section 1.
You have another amendment for it.
Mr. Chair, we have... go ahead.
They mixed together, so why don't we just quickly go through the bill, because I don't think there will be controversy over it.
Yeah, and we could sort of have the whole... I think that what we'd like to do is move the whole House version and then make amendments to that one. And Mr. Pender, if you want to continue going through.
Mr. Chair, at the bottom of page one of the side-by-side, there's section requiring a second notice that is in the Senate bill, and I don't believe there's anything equivalent in the House bill requiring a second notice like that. And at the top of page two of the summary, I can't quickly see what the differences are. I'm sorry, I wasn't expecting to.
I see in line 2.20 there's an additional section listed there, but.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 6.6.
2.20?
Mr. Chair, maybe the witnesses know what the difference is.
we've inserted the section 3.27.665 in addition to 3.27.64.
The reference to 3.27.665 relates to the House only language on page R3. The next page has that section about reinstatement and the right to reinstate. So that's what that extra reference is that isn't in the Senate bill.
And at the end of the paragraph, it's got different sections and subdivisions than in the Senate version than the House version.
Mr. Chair,
I beg your pardon. We took out that last line in the House version. Representative Dabney.
Mr. Chair, a question for Mr. Pender. I'm trying to understand if the effect of the Senate language on the bottom of R1, the notice requirement, is functionally the same as the reference to 3.27.665 in the House language on the top of R3 that you just referenced. That get us to the same
Mr.
place,
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Stang?
Representative Dabney, the Senate language was an earlier version of the same concept. It just didn't work very well. It was put in a different place. It was confusing. We weren't sure what effect it had on the repossession action. So you're correct. That's what it intended to do. The House language, I think, was negotiated subsequent to that and is much, much better. That's why I hesitated to spend a lot of time going through some of the Senate language if we're not going to adopt it or proceed with it, because we're comparing something that's kind of off the table, I think.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Pender.
Mr. Chair, as was just said, page R3 has the right to reinstatement language of the House, and that basically goes into effect. If you get the original notice and it says you have 30 days, then at that point, if you don't make your back payments by that time, the lender sends out this second notice about the right to reinstate, giving you 30 days to reinstate the loan, and that again is just making up the back payments and not having to actually pay off the entire loan. So it's a little different from a foreclosure situation where you'd have, it's at a certain point, you'd have to actually pay off the entire loan. Moving on to page R4, the House has adds language on allowable costs, and those are the costs that can be collected in connection with the reinstatement. That if you choose to reinstate after that first 30 days, you pay the amounts that are owing, and the allowable costs as defined on page R4. And then we have a definition of borrower that's similar to the Senate version. Although it also talks about the person who's either applying for or obtaining a loan. Both the bills, well, I'll just talk about the House bill, I guess, since that's what we decided to do. Churning is defined, and that is where a new loan is made on a manufactured home that there's already an existing loan on, and the new loan is of no benefit to the no tangible benefit to the borrower. So essentially, it benefits the lender. Then we have both bills have a definition of manufactured home, and both bills have a definition of negative amortization, and these terms are used later to prohibit doing these things, to prohibit churning or prohibit negative amortization. Negative amortization loans are loans where initially you're paying less than the interest that's accruing on the loan, so that over time your loan balance gets larger instead of smaller. And then the House language has a duty of agency, and this is similar to language that passed last year in the predatory lending bills, basically saying that a person who's acting as a broker in connection with a manufactured home loan has an agency duty to the borrower. In other words, has to look out for the borrower's best interests rather than the lender's best interests or the broker's best interest. And then moving on to page R6, this is continuing the language about this duty of agency, the duty of being the dutiful, a faithful agent to the borrower instead of to the lender or the broker. And then moving on to page R7, there's a standard of conduct that applies to manufactured home lenders, and this looks visually very similar in the two bills, and basically prohibits fraud or other deceptive kind of practices, including the clause 6 there, where a borrower is being advised to pay off a so-called special loan, meaning something, a loan from a government or similar thing that's beneficial. Then moving on to page R8, we have section 12, which has limits on the amount of interest and finance charges and fees. And page R9 continues that section limiting various loan charges, including prepayment penalties. And there's an exemption that covers certain kinds of lenders that are regulated either by the state or the federal government. And then we have the remedies section, section 13, which basically gives a borrower who's violated, who's harmed by a violation of this act, a private right of action, and requires the court to grant actual incidental and consequential damages. And there's also a separate fraud remedy, and there's the sentence that's being included in many pieces of legislation the last couple of years about a private right of action by the borrower under this chapter is in the public interest. So that's the House bill.
Thank you. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, in order to move this along, I wonder if we could hear from Mr. Brunner and Ms. Kaplan on the language, and then we can take motions.
That would be great. Mr. Brunner?
We're Mark Brunner. We're satisfied with the language that we've just gone through and that we've been able to work with the advocates on in terms of the House version. I think it's been a good good piece of legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I just wanted to reiterate what Mr. Brunner said and thank the MMHA and folks in the legislature and Ron Elwood from Legal Services with helping shepherd us through this process. I think we're really going to be moving the ball forward. And, achieve an aim that I think we can all agree on, and that's trying to keep people in their homes, which is really, I think, in everyone's best interest. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I want to thank the House and Senate author, as well as Mr. Brunner and Ms. Kaplan and other interested people who may have worked on it. I mean, that's the way it should work. We started the bill, I think, in the Senate, and we knew we needed to work with it, and Senator Marty kept doing that and meeting with people, and I think that this is a case of where we evolved into something that's a good piece of legislation. With it certainly had, it was good in the beginning and good certainly in terms of intent, and I think we moved to something that's practical and it'll work, and as Ms. Kaplan said, help people stay in their homes. So I appreciate that as chair of the Commerce Committee.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, with that, I'll move the House language with the addition of the A3 amendment, which was handed out, which I believe is the same definition as the Senate has, except for some exceptions at the bottom. And I think that's what both sides agreed to. So I'd like to move the House language with the insertion of the A3 amendment.
Very good. Senator Marty moves to move the House version with the A3 amendment included. That's also on page R4 in the Senate version. There's a big gap where it says manufactured home lender. I don't know if you hit the wrong button, Mr. Pender, with that, or the revisor. No, I'm just kidding. Any questions on the motion? Very good. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carries. The amendment or the House language as amended is adopted. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I also, the other day when looking over it, became a little bit concerned about on page 3, line 16, and page 2, line 8. This is on R1, is page 2, line 8. If the debtor does not sign for the registered or certified letter, and I realize does not sign is there because sometimes people refuse to sign knowing that good things don't come in certified packages.
Yeah.
And was concerned that if somebody was not home and they were told, well, we've got a letter for you at the post office and you don't get there for a while, and the advocates on both sides apparently came up with some language which is in the handwritten, which is in the 8.5 by 11 sheet that was handed out as well, and which language I think works well. Maybe Mr. Stang can tell us the language we'd need for the insertion in the two places.
Well, he's digging that up. I think it might be a good time to hear from the testifiers about that provision. Just want to make sure that everyone is familiar where we've been on this issue. Mr. Bruner, are you able to
sure.
testify to that issue?
I am Mark Bruner, and I, Senator Marty raised a good point in terms of if someone's on vacation, doesn't get the notice, that kind of thing, that when it's served and you put a post-it note on the door, you have certified mail, it blows away and they don't know. So I think the idea here of having the lender also concurrently send a first-class copy of the notice goes a long way in addressing that issue, and we think it makes sense to include that language.
I had a question yesterday when we were thinking about this thing. Well, why don't we just send everything first class instead of certified? But I think it's a good idea to do both because you can have somebody who's moved or hightailed it out somewhere, and you do need to get something to them, and they may have forwarded the address but not actually come to the physical property where the certified mail is. So I think that is good to cover all the bases. Ms. Kaplan, have you taken a look at it?
Thank you. Yeah, I have had the opportunity to take a look at it. I think it makes a lot of sense. I mean, another concern that occurred to me is, there are many folks who are living in the communities who are working odd shifts and multiple jobs and things like that and might not have the opportunity to get to the post office to turn in that little notice. But as long as, people have the opportunity to get the information that they need, and I think that the more times that the information is, attempted to get to them, the more likely they are to get it. Plus, if somebody is trying to avoid receiving that certified or registered letter, at the very least they will receive a notice that a process is happening. So I think that this amendment does make a lot of sense to us as well.
Very good. I know as a candidate, when you door knock and manufactured home park, I'll occasionally come across angry people because I've woken them up because they're getting ready to work the third shift at 4 in the afternoon. So I'm sorry, did I see a hand over here?
No,
it's nodding. And then I'd like to just call on Mr. Stang for the insertion points here.
Mr. Chairman, I believe on page R1 on the House side, line 1.11, after mail, if I'm reading this right, we would insert and concurrently a first-class copy of the notice. And then on line 2.9, the only change I can see there is deleting 5 and inserting 7. And I think when those changes are made, it reflects the language on this piece of paper that was distributed.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Dabney.
I may have just beat Senator Marty to the punch. It needs to be inserted again on page 3, line 11, I think it is, in the right to reinstate section. Or maybe it's 3.12. I'll certainly defer to staff.
That is correct. On line 3.12 after letter, I think the insertion would be and concurrently a first-class copy of the letter. And on line 3.17, delete 5 and insert 7.
Senator Marty will move that amendment. Any questions to the amendment? Make sense to everybody? Very good. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
And all those opposed? Motion carries. The amendment is adopted. I think we're done with cleaning up the House language. I just want to make sure that anybody in the audience has a chance to make any comments on the conference committee report that we'd be drafting. Mr. Bruner, Ms. Kaplan, everything's all happy and satisfactory?
Thank you. I just want
anything else we can do for you?
No, I just wanted to thank you all so much for doing this. I think this is really important. So thank you. Thank you for everybody who participated in this process.
Very good. Senator Marty.
I'll move we adopt the conference committee report.
Well, that was going to be my next question. This being my first time chairing the conference committee, how do we actually wrap it up? Senator Marty moves that we accept the conference committee report as we've just put it together. Any questions to the motion? All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. The conference committee report is adopted. And then I have this lengthy piece of paper that says what staff is supposed to do with it. So that's good. Senator Martin.
Mr. Chairman, the staff will prepare it, and they will round robin it if they can for signatures then.
Very good. Very good. Not hearing any other comments or questions, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Representative Daphne.